You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Let's do this fast.
Your cousin
from Boston. Sam Adams Summer Ale is brewed with a hint of citrus. Perfect for a hot summer day. Like this one. End of commercial. It's peak tanning hours, dude. I'm out. Sam Adams Summer Ale. The Boston Beer Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Drink responsibly.
Hey, imagine if all your frustrations about advertising your business could be solved right now. You should know that podcast listeners are more engaged and higher converting than any other advertising medium. So try AdHub today and reap the rewards of Spreaker's self-advertising platform. It makes it as effortless as ever to be heard by thousands, regardless of the listening app they use. Visit Spreaker.com/AdHub. That's Spreaker.com/AdHub. And start using your advertising dollars in an impactful way.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Fix with me, Jamie Holm. For our Irish subscribers around the globe, I hope you've had a fantastic St. Patrick's Day and tried to make the most of it. I know it's not easy when we're in lockdown. As always, the Midweek Fix is brought to you by footballprizes.co.uk. Go check out their website. There's lots of cool prizes, including a cash giveaway, which is always worth checking out. Now, tonight's show is going to be based around a topic that is never too far away from the news, and that is the rise of stats within football. So joining myself and Gav, as we are, I think it's fair to say, Gav, probably not stats experts at this stage. Would you say that's fair?
I think that's more than fair.
So hopefully joining us tonight to shed a little bit more light and expertise on stats and their use within the game is Christy Holly. Christy, I'm going to give you a fantastic introduction now, mate.
Yeah, I'll pay you off.
A World Cup winning analyst with the US Women's National Team and now head coach of Racing Louisville. And Josh Williams, who is a football scouting writer for Reach PLC. I'm sure you've come across some of his work on Twitter, including the fantastic Analyzing Anfield podcast. Christy, Josh, thanks for joining us, lads. How are you both?
Cheers, lads. Great to be on here. Thanks for taking the time.
What did you make of that intro, mate? You like that?
I'll send you a tenner. I think a tenner and a pint of Guinness might get me over the line there.
Well, true to form, I'm already having one, mate. I've got to on St. Patrick's Day.
I'm very jealous, I'm not going to lie. So have one for me while you're at it.
I will do. You're for those that obviously don't know you, you're based in America. Obviously, you've got an Irish twang to your accent there, mate. Have you done anything special for Paddy's Day?
I have not, mate. I've not left. I'm still in work right now. So over here, it's 10 past six. I'm in Louisville. And I might, if I'm lucky, get a wee stout later on this evening, if I can pull it off. But it depends what time I get out of here. So it doesn't feel like Paddy's Day yet. Got now, green grass, that's about it.
Yeah, exactly. Now, before we kind of dive into the main topics that we've got for tonight, Gav, as we kind of touched on, I think it's fair to say that we're probably a little old school in our views. So hopefully between the two of us, we might be able to learn a little bit from the lads tonight. What do you reckon?
If the lads say 4 to 5 sentences each on stats tonight, I learn something, genuinely. No, I am old school. I watch football and I base an opinion on it. And some stats I see, anything with an X before it, I'm a bit wary of. So the letter G, the letter A, anything with an X before it, I'm a bit wary of. I just find I need more context than just graphs. So maybe the lads are probably Christy was showing.
You can see there's smirks on their faces.
Yeah. And listen, That's why Jamie's brought me on, because he knows I'm like absolutely ridiculous when it comes to stats. Like I literally the only stat, like, you know the way you say, oh, it's the one in the top corner that counts on the TV. I'm not that bad, but I am. I'm very limited, let's say, you know. So, but look, I'm always open to learning and stuff like that, and I'm sure the two lads will shed some light on these.
Hey, that makes two of us, Gavin.
Well, listen, I'm sitting here with a pen and a piece of paper, and you're waving these things around that you stick on the back of your players, and they, you know, you watch them go off, and it's mad stuff. So, to me, that's mental. But I'm sure we learn as we go on.
So I'm going to come to you first, Josh. Right, so we'll dive straight in. There is a lot that's written in the news about just how much of a role stats are now playing within the game. And I want to kind of start with you, and then we'll kind of go around the room to see what you feel from your perspective are the biggest misconceptions about stats and why you think there's probably so much resistance, you know, from certain fans when you see a new wave of kind of data come in. And as Gav said, you know, I think there is a common perception, you know, anything with an X in front of it, people see it come up on the graphics on Sky or Match of the Day now, and some fans maybe haven't took the time to learn about it. What do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions around stats being used within football?
I think a lot of the resistance stems from how poorly the stats have been applied in the past, really, and how they can be applied by the wrong person to suit an agenda. That's not really how they're supposed to be used. The thing with stats, they're a product of the user, really. They're supposed to paint a blank canvas, if used correctly. But I think they're also capable of almost being used like Photoshop to edit an already painted canvas based on that person's opinions. As I said, it's open to the user, and I think a lot of mainstream outlets maybe will, you know, tweet certain stats. There's clearly a gender, there's clearly an intent there to get a reaction. Say, for example, you know, Van Dijk's tackles compared to, you know, a bad defender. You know, sometimes that bad defender will make more, and it looks like he's a better defender to those who maybe haven't looked a little bit deeper. So I think that the misconceptions stem from how easily they can be altered to suit an agenda, whereas someone who can use them, someone who can apply them properly, will hopefully be able to tell an accurate story.
We've spoken, Christy. So for those that don't know, me and Christy used to play on the same team together. We've been friends since university. He's gone on to have a life in football. I absolutely haven't, unfortunately.
Listen, my life's not very rosy either.
But from your side, mate, I mean, obviously you now, in your role, you know, you're heavily surrounded by stats, and kind of the new wave of information and data teams that you have at your disposal. Would you go along with, similar to Josh, what do you think are some of the biggest pitfalls, I suppose, with how stats are being used and interpreted in today's game?
I think if you think about how just generally things evolve every time people are, you know, in the employment sector, everybody's looking for a way to justify their position, right? So it's, or create a position at times. So all of a sudden now, through the use of social media, we have so many fantastic analysts that probably don't have so much in-game experience as others who've made a living in the game. So I think it's the context with which the stats are used. I was jokingly say it's kind of like it's like writing a book with no verbs. Like, so we've all this stuff, all these items, but there's nothing describing where these items came from, whether it's a passing percentage, whether it's tackles won, whether it's shots on target. So we're putting things in context and giving out the whole story is really important piece. And I think Josh touched on it. You see, you know, I've removed myself off social media at this point because it's so toxic, but you can see these cracking arguments going back and forth, and some lad's got an agenda and someone else has got an agenda, and they'll pull.
Why do I feel like I'm usually part of those? And I probably
they go fishing, and they, so then if you want to tell a story with your stats, you can tell. You can 100% tell it. Doesn't mean you're wrong, but you can. It just allows people to drive agendas that maybe are not relative to what the circumstances are. So I think stats can be so powerful and so useful, but I think the context in which they're used and what they're related to becomes the most important piece.
Gav, Christy touches on something interesting there, and I think this is in part the problem. People, and it kind of lends to what Josh was saying as well, people can take a stat, apply it in any which way they wish if it paints a nice picture for the player that they like. And what that does for the person that they're arguing with, who maybe has a different view, is it gets their back up, and it just creates this swell of negativity around the use of stats. And like Josh said, probably being used incorrectly to try and fit a narrative. Do you think that's one of the big problems we face now?
Yeah, I think having, like, you know, Christy mentioned social media then, he's more or less removed himself from it, and that's not a bad move. And the reason I'm saying that is because this is where you see most of the arguments about it, you know, on social media. You know, if you watch Monday Night Football, I'm not a fan of Carragher and Neville. They just don't do it for me. But when they're talking and when they're discussing stuff, they will show you context. You know, you'll see a screen, you'll see, you know, player A made really good forward passes in this game, and here they are, you know, and you can rate them as how good they are. Was he under pressure? Did he, you know, that forward pass, how far was it? Stuff like that. But when you're on social media and stuff like that, and you're literally having a text argument about stats, and there's no context. Like, you know, such and such is a pressing machine. But if you watch the game, you know, you'll see that, yes, he pressed, but he pressed because he was close to that guy. He didn't make massive runs to press. It's all about context. Christy's right. The context is absolutely massive in it for me. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know what I was thinking before we come on? Everyone has a football app, you know, live scores, wherever it might be, right? And you might not support the team, but you're keeping a track on a game. You might have a bet on, whatever it might be. It might affect your team's league position because of this game, whatever it is. And you click on it and you see it's 0-0, but you see, Jesus, they've 65% possession and they have 15 shots. They're all over this team. They're definitely going to score. And then you watch it later on with some context, and yet they've loads of forward passes, but they're going nowhere. They've had 15 shots, but they've all been from 25 yards, you know. And Jamie, me and you've spoken about this, like Liverpool's form over the last couple of months, and people went, they've all the ball and they're doing this, but they're not doing much, you know. And I think they can be misleading without context. So that's why I always come back to, by all means, tell me what happened, but let me see it as well. So I think the visual argument is a much better one than the text one, and ones on social media. I was having a bit of an argument last night on social media, actually, about Jordan Henderson, surprisingly.
Not like you, that mate.
Not like me.
It's usually my job.
Well, I've kind of told myself 6 months ago that I'm not having any more arguments about Jordan Henderson because they're pointless. But I ended up discussing crime podcast with the guy by the end of it, so it ended well. But that's what I'm saying, they become pointless, don't they? They just dwindle out into nothing, and nobody wins an argument, really.
Exactly. And Christy, I mean, we've had lots of debates around this very topic, and you know, I think it always comes back to some people like to say, I trust the eyes, I can see the eyes, you know, my eyes don't deceive me. Surely there's a case here for it's both. It doesn't need to be exclusive, one or the other. It's using the stats in the right context. And your day job, or actually, rather than head coach, if we go back to when you were opposition analyst with the national team, what were, I suppose, the stats? Because there's so many stats now that are thrown around, on a day-to-day. In your role, you know, if you're preparing a report for the manager, you know, for an upcoming World Cup game, what are the metrics that you focus on? What are the biggest, most important metrics that a manager wants to see and can help you tell the story of an opposition and maybe where their weaknesses are?
So I think that's an interesting one. I think you've got all the generic ones, right? Shots on target, where the shots are generated from, possession, so on and so forth. But then the stats that the information that you're looking to bring back to the coach has to be related to their game model and how the coach sees the game. So, you know, and this is a long way winded of getting at the answer, but you know, you see all these lads on social media, and some of them are brilliant, and there's a lot of good information out there, but then you see some lads just with the story that they want to tell, and they want to try and get a couple of likes or a retweet, and they just bring a stat out. The stat can be irrelevant because it's not related to how the team that is playing wants to approach the game, whether that's from an attacking standpoint or defensive standpoint. So if I went to our coach and talked about a certain stat that was not relevant to how we want to approach the game, then it would just be binned off. So with that in mind, you know, the USA is a very high pressing team, so they want to know which centre backs are playing the ball out, who they play through when they're penetrating into the midfield third. How many, a simple one, this isn't a stat that you would see too much, but how many left footers they have across the back line? Can we shape the play? Can we do a lopsided press? Where do the highest number of goal scoring opportunities come from? Is it down the right? Is it a certain pattern down the right? So there's a large part of it that is still based upon the eye test and what you tactically see going on. You use the stats to reinforce it. So for example, during the World Cup, the first thing I would do is watch the game again and then build my opinion on what I felt happened. And then you use the stats to reinforce it, as opposed to get the stats and then find the video that you think suits the stats that you want to use. So, everybody's got their own way of doing things, but I think if you contaminate your brain with some of the stats that, you know, just to help you paint the picture, you might not be painting the correct picture about a team. I think it's important to go with what you see happening on the field, and you can reinforce it with certain stats based upon the game model that's been designed by the team that you're either scouting for or the team that you're coaching.
Yeah, there's a lot of comments coming in on the chat, and everybody seems to be taking a similar theme to Kev O'Sullivan here, who says it's like anything with stats, they're only as good as the person reading them or their ability to comprehend them. Yeah. And I think some people, it's like they don't want to understand. So like you said before, and Gav said it, it's like you're having an argument with yourself here. Nobody's going to win. Nobody's prepared to give an inch. So it's kind of, you know, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy in the end.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. Like, you see these go on all the time. Ultimately, it has to tie back to the game model, right? So if you look at Liverpool and you see all these different statistics about Henderson this, Naby Keita that, it has to be related to what is a way of quantifying how successful he is within his roles and responsibilities in the team. So to me, and I haven't watched Liverpool.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Oh, that's a cheer we used to do in softball.
What? It's actually Geico.
Whenever someone hit a triple, we would wave our bats and yell, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more. But we never got to use it because we would only hit home runs. Annoying.
The phrase is from Geico because they help save people money.
Geico? Yeah, they were our team sponsor.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
A couple of weeks because they're losing so much. Just much like Arsenal.
Thanks, but, thanks, mate.
And listen, you know I love Liverpool, so I throw it around a wee bit. But on a serious note, I know they've got different roles, so they can't be quantified by the same numbers. You can't measure them against each other. You know, it's different roles within the team. To my memory, Henderson's playing a lot deeper in the midfield, and obviously this season he's playing quite a bit of time at centre-back. Whereas you got Naby Keita, you're looking to see him higher up the field. There's certain things that do cross over and you can challenge that, but they definitely have different roles. But it can't be just quantified in this black and white world that Keita's better because he breaks the press five times more than Henderson. It's just not that black and white.
So there's two topics I want to cover before we dive into the famed XG debate, right? Because we need to ease our way into that one, I think, a little bit. And Josh, I want to come to you because we started talking and engaging a long time ago on Twitter. And I suppose that your story interests me because you used to produce a lot of your own content. For those that don't follow Josh, it's Distance Covered on Twitter. And then obviously you got your role at Reach. From your side, what was it always that kind of interested you about the tactical side and I suppose the analytical side of the game and that ultimately allowed it now to become your career?
I think I'm just naturally analytical anyway as a person, so I think that helps. But I think just as I've got older, you know, reading football books and stuff like that, I think it kind of just opened up a complete new world for me when I realised that, you know, a football match isn't just decided by, you know, a flip of a coin or the best team wins. There's details in a football game, specifically on a tactical side, strategy and things like that, that can decide a football game. And once I kind of realised that, I just kind of immersed myself into it really and really engaged with it and then eventually started to apply my own knowledge and got to a point where I obviously created the Twitter account and started to engage with, you know, like-minded people. Say, for example, you know, Sadio Mane on a football pitch, if he's not playing particularly well in a certain game, the person I used to watch the football with, you know, say my dad, for example, he would just say, oh, he doesn't fancy it today. But usually there's kind of underlying reasons behind why maybe Sadio Mane is not playing particularly well. Is he getting man-marked? You know, is he playing out of position? You know, whatever it might be. It can be really basic. It can be really deep. But when I just started to realise that, you know, there's kind of reasons behind Everton on a football pitch. And again, I'm just naturally quite inquisitive anyway. I like to know reasons why. I like to know the source of problems and stuff. It just kind of worked for me. And then obviously I got to a point whereby a role came up at Reach, a football analysis type role, kind of like producing, I suppose, Monday night football type content on a daily basis to do with football teams. And I applied and got the role, and I've been doing it since. But, you know, no complaints. I mean, it's a perfect job. And I think I've improved quite considerably since applying myself every single day.
Good man. You're living the dream there, mate, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
Gav, I want to come to you, and I want to move on to, I suppose, the importance of stats when recruiting players, because one of the topics that's kind of been thrown at Liverpool, and I suppose it all started kind of negatively. I think it was it Neil Ashton who wrote the article in the Daily Mail a long time ago, kind of about Michael Edwards and his famed laptop and his air-conditioned room. You know, I suppose Liverpool have kind of become the poster boys, if you will, for the kind of the database approach to players, or certainly one that gets the most column inches anyway. I know it's been applied by a lot of teams. You know, when you look at recruitment, do you think a lot of it from your perspective now would center around a numbers-based approach as opposed to, you know, your old-fashioned traditional scouting?
There's no doubt they still go and watch players. You know, no, I'm not saying Michael Edwards is wandering around Europe watching players, but that, you know, there would be, there has to be somebody from Liverpool Football Club at certain games, or people affiliated with that club. You know, there's a lot of scouts out there that would be, I suppose, neutral's not the word, I'll think of the word in a minute, but you know, they would work for a couple of clubs and put players forward and stuff like that, but like, listen, it is a numbers game. There's loads of metrics there. You know, I think when Brentford doing it a couple of years ago, where they were heavy on metrics and they were literally just signing players on metrics. It didn't matter if he was 5'4". He was playing centre half and he was doing great. So he was playing. And we were looking to sign him, and the metrics was crazy. Having said that, they have to go and watch players, Jamie, you know, and I was going to ask the lads there, but I had it written down here because I'm wondering how many times that they would look at a metric, say for argument's sake, if you're looking for a left winger for Liverpool or a left sided forward, whatever you might call it, as a backup or maybe a successor to Sadio Mane, right? So you're looking, what are you looking for? You're looking for, has he got good pace? Is he good at the press? Does he hold the ball? Does he protect the ball? Does he get into central areas? All this sort of stuff. All the stuff Mane does, you look at it, they have the stats on Mane. Can we find some similar? I suppose it's a question for the lads as well. Surely something comes up where they go, there's all these stats here, but when I actually watch them, the context is completely different, if you know what I mean. You know, yeah, there's loads of stats about him pressing, but we pressed 20 times in that game, but the 20 presses were just brilliant, you know, and he doesn't do a lot outside that. I think it's very interesting in the recruitment side of things, because there's no way for me, Jamie, they're just reading spreadsheets and deciding that's the man. They have to be watching the player as well. And I just wonder with the lads, is there something where they, like even in Christie's role, you know, he's saying he looks at stats of his players every day. Does he ever look at the stats and then come back and look at footage and go, geez, the stats are there, but there's actually a lot more going on there. Yeah. You know, do you know what I'm trying to get at? They're nearly defying the actual viewing of it, and the stats are nearly clashing with each other, I suppose. Does that happen? Because I think it does sometimes.
I think it was Kevin O'Sullivan said earlier, like obviously the Major League Baseball is following the Moneyball approach, and so is basketball and baseball, right? That differs from football to me in terms of player recruitment. You've all seen Moneyball, haven't you? Mm-hmm. It differs to me because it's very defined start-stop rules within a setup. Football's far too fluid and flexible to be able to make something as black and white as that. You know, I think Moneyball is like, how many times you get in second base, right? Can you go out and sign a player because he wins You know, 8 out of his 10 tackles, so that makes him a good right back. Now, because you have to see what his distribution's like in the build up, what can he do in the final third? So there's a lot more context that is needed and a lot more depth to it. I think they kind of try and answer that question, Gavin. My thing would be when you're obviously when you're going under recruitment, right? Everything has to tie back again to your game model. What mm-hmm. is it the way you want to play a game, right? And then within that, what are some of the non-negotiables? So for me, like if you're Klopp, there's certain things that he'll say are absolutely vitally important for him as an attacking player. One of them's probably their ability to press, right? So he's probably looking at not just tactical data, or he's looking more into physical data. Beyond that, where are they creating the most amount of opportunities? Where do they score the most amount of goals from? And does that fit into the model that he has already established that he thinks it would be successful within the Premier League, which obviously he's shown to be successful. So, and I know, for example, with us, we do look at numbers, and sometimes there's more in depth on certain players depending upon the level, but it's rarely that it is just, well, actually I'll say this, it's never that you just pick a player based upon numbers. To me, it just informs the conversation. It informs the conversation. Like, I know there was a lot of information about Jota when you signed him, and why did you sign Jota over
from Watford,
right? So there was a lot of questions about that, but he fit in well. But then in that same conversation, the left back that he's brought in from Greece,
Tsimikas, right? Yeah.
So he was another Moneyball approach, wasn't he? And it's really not worked out just yet. And I think the centre back from Germany was most likely, because the reality is, as much as things were last minute, there's no way, like, you're in cloud boxing, who's let me Google a player, right? They've got a list of players by metrics that they deem would be the most successful within their system, right? That player's not available, take the next player, not available. So they're making their way down the list. You know, maybe in 2 years' time, those lads might be right. But at this moment in time, were they the best recruitment players? That you might ask questions about that policy, wouldn't you? So I think it informs the conversation rather than makes the decision.
One thing to mention there, Gav, actually, because Christy, you're in a bit of a unique situation. I was telling Josh before we came on air, the new club that you're working, well, the same new club in Louisville, you actually turned up on the first day in the job and you didn't have a team. There was no squad. You call it a roster.
I say squad over here. Like,
okay, squad.
No, I say squad. Changing room, not locker room, and boots, not cleats. We had no team, so you can. There's a couple of things a couple of different approaches, but our approach is very simple. Let's design the way that we feel will bring us the style of play that will bring us the most amount of success. Once we've got that, let's design the profile of the player that would be most successful within each position and what their roles would be and what metrics we feel would be important for them to be successful with our style of play. So there's a layered approach. But then, at the end of the day, like, Jamie, you know me well enough, if you're someone that ticks all those boxes and you're a little bit big time and you don't fit in, I'm just not going to compromise on that. So a stat doesn't tell you that piece. That's where then there's a one-on-one conversation, and you're looking at a player that's gone in behind and stuck the ball in the back line, and not a teammate doesn't go near them, the way they don't really like Salah, in my opinion. To me, I don't want that in the team. I don't care how good you are. I don't want that, and a stat won't give you that number. So there's a lot more to it than just simple numbers when it comes to the recruitment, in my opinion, anyway.
So talking of recruitment, Josh, I want to come to you. Obviously, in your day job, you would be, building out player profiles. You would be analysing different... And from a little...
He's frozen there, has he?
I didn't get away. Did that make sense?
He didn't pay the Wi-Fi bill.
No, he didn't pay the Wi-Fi bill. What is going
That's
on?
That's it. No, I'm back. Don't worry. I don't know what. I think my missus is fed up. She wants to watch something on Netflix and she just turned off my laptop there. I'm back anyway. Hopefully, I think. Josh, you'll just see her appear from behind me and smack me around the head with a drawing pin or something.
Oh, Lord.
What I was going to say, mate, is I suppose from a Liverpool perspective, based on the players that we do need, or the type of profiles you think we need, who do you think Liverpool could potentially be in the market for from a recruitment perspective?
It's tricky. I think Liverpool's current problem, obviously, is centred on the centre back issue. But I think if you look up front as well, I think Liverpool needs some sort of backup forward to a higher level than a Divock Origi and Takumi Minamino for me. So I think you're probably looking at a centre back and you're looking at a forward in the mould of Jota. We do this on Analyse Anfield quite frequently every now and then. We look at who Liverpool might be looking at, players with a certain profile and stuff. And in defence, one player that we mentioned in November that we actually ended up making a bid for in January was Dusan Kalecakar at Marseille. He was a player that I just thought fitted the bill. He looked like a Liverpool type player. As Christie's just said, you know, he related to Liverpool's game model, I thought, at the time. So I wouldn't be surprised if Liverpool chased him again. And up front, I don't think we'll get him, but I'm a huge fan of Harvey Barnes. I think he's very, very like the type of direct Klopp-type player that benefits at Anfield. I think there's a few more. There's Rafinha, there's Pedro Neto. These are all Premier League players. But, you know, there's plenty out there that fit Liverpool's game. It's just about picking out those players who are attainable at a realistic value and who can almost make a step up once they move to Anfield and start playing the Jurgen Klopp.
That was my next question, actually, is do you think that Liverpool will adopt that strategy of going for that ilk of player rather than the show-stopping, world superstar forward? You know, there's been mentions of the likes of Mbappe, the likes of Haaland. I mean, I think that's a pipe dream, personally. I can't see us doing something like that. Do you think it would be the type of profile of the players that you just mentioned as opposed to the big superstar?
Yeah, that's FSG's model, really, isn't it? I think if you were to spend over 100 million on, well, probably over 150 million on Haaland or Mbappe, they might deliver on a pitch. But I think Liverpool will be able to get a player who delivers maybe not to the same level, but not far off for 100 million less. You know, we got Jota for around 40 million. He's going to be a top attacker, in my opinion, for about the next 5-10 years at Liverpool, scoring quite frequently and stuff. So when Liverpool can kind of exploit the market by getting a player for less than his true worth, I just can't see Liverpool's recruitment department going and chasing a superstar, even though they're both quite clearly ridiculous. It just doesn't fit the transfer model that's delivered success.
Gav, we've spoke at length about our friends FSG.
This is where it gets messy, isn't it?
Yeah. Where do you sit on it? Do you think that, like Josh, we'd be going for the players that we can build into a star as opposed to buying a ready-made star?
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Oh, that's a cheer we used to do in softball.
What? It's actually Geico.
Whenever someone hit a triple, we would wave our bats and yell, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more. But we never got to use it because we would only hit home runs. Annoying.
The phrase is from Geico because they help save people money.
Geico? Yeah, they were our team sponsor.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Sean, he says on this show an awful lot, he's not bothered about the price once it's the right player. And I think this, you know, we're talking about stats here and, you know, and people in the chat have said as well, you know, all right, but, you know, take a forward for argument's sake. You know, you're looking for goals, you're looking for assists, you're looking for press, you're looking for whatever it might be and all the analytics and the metrics that you want with regards to a forward. But you're also looking at what age is he? What country is he coming from? Does he speak English? Does he settle in well? Can we find out if he's German and he's moved to Spain, did he settle in well then? Because they will find out all this stuff. They literally go through the guy's life from start to finish to find out it all. And I'm kind of with Shawnee. If you get me the right player, I'm absolutely fine. You know, like, where can we argue with it? Not really. You know, when you look at Mane, you look at Salah, Firmino was quite significant money at the time, but look what he's done for us. You know, we have done Van Dijk and we've done Alisson. You know, we've done 50 million on Keita, but overall we've incredible value. Like when Alderman at 25 million just looks ridiculous. 5 years on or whatever it might be. The big thing for, and I've said it, you know, I've said this, Jamie, the big thing for me is that, and I keep saying it, FSG need to step outside their comfort zone this summer. And I'm not talking about don't get me wrong, if you give me a forward of talent all day long, and I don't care what his fucking stats are, just put him in the team. And if you want to keep crossing it from the right and left, you do that, mate, because this fella is just ridiculous. All right. He's literally a fella you've made up on the computer game. And just, you know, when you make up your pro on FIFA and then you tap the triggers continuously for 8 minutes and then you get a cheat and you, that's him. Right. So, but like Josh says, that's astronomical money, and I don't know. That's not what I'm talking about when I say step out of comfort zone, because they have done it. They have done Van Dijk and they have done Alisson when they've needed to. For me, it's just with everything that's gone on with them with regards to COVID, no one in stadiums, reduced TV money, all that sort of stuff. The way they do things won't work for me. And the biggest thing for it is, they've players there that they probably should have let go a year ago, and now they're gonna try to let them go now or get rid of them, and they're gonna have to take that medicine a little bit. So it won't fund purchases as much as you think, and they will have to step outside that realm that they have and that system that they have this summer to compete and to keep going, because there's other teams are going to put money in there, Jamie. There's no doubt about it. But I think you have to trust Liverpool on the same side with the likes. And do you remember we had a committee and we named it a committee and it was mental and everyone just kept referring to Liverpool's committee rather than the football club? You still have that. They just don't call themselves a committee anymore. But you'd have to trust them in, you know, when they look at stats on players, when they look at his surroundings, and they say, listen, for argument's sake, this player over here is 70 million quid. And yes, he's done it, but this guy is 40 and we think and trust us. This guy in a year would be absolutely brilliant. You have to trust him on that count as well. I think it's a huge summer for FSG, and I think the way they do it, and the way they do it stats wise and all that, and the background they build around it is more important than ever. Really, really is.
So I'm gonna throw one straight back at you, Gav. Mm-hmm. Right, FSG, yeah. their focus on data. And look, by the way, Josh, I have to say there was a comment that came in there just quickly, but I think it was from, let me find it. Here we go. Free World says, does this lad work for FSG? Can you just confirm that you don't work for FSG?
I can confirm that, yeah. Is he a Netsbet man, is he?
Just had to clear that one up, mate, yeah. So I have to say, and people will have heard us discuss this previously, on the whole, I'm very happy with FSG. I think they've been great owners. At the same time, I think they are risk averse, and they needed to back Klopp more in January. And I just don't want to see, if you look at Ben Davies as the poster boy for me, in that supposedly his stats are very high, his profile fits Liverpool, left-hand side player, pacey, good distribution, ranked very high on a lot of metrics. So I've been told, a good friend of mine, Al Rogers, who basically is friends with some of the committee at Liverpool and the recruiters, he basically said that this guy was actually being mooted to move to Arsenal at one point because his stats were so high.
It's not good enough for Arsenal.
But what I would say is, Christie's an Arsenal fan, by the way, for those that don't know, you may have guessed. What I would say is, I don't want to see too many signings like that, because I feel like sometimes we try to box a little bit too clever. And sometimes we can go and get the right type of player that everyone can see. But FSG and with the data, sometimes do we try and be a little bit too clever with the signings? I, Ben Davies.
Is this for me?
Yeah.
That one stands out, Jamie, because of the January. You know, they didn't back him. They didn't do what they were meant to do. Like, all this, oh, Matip got injured and then we had to make a move. Mate, you know what I mean? Matip got injured. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this happens all the time. You know, he's played probably 40% of the games for Liverpool since he's arrived. So that isn't an argument that stands up. I think that's a situation they ended up painting themselves into, right? And he hasn't been seen playing for Liverpool, and people will tell you, look, Robertson needed time, Fabinho needed time, whatever it might be. But, yeah, they're probably a bit too clever on that. And only because they weren't, just, in my opinion, decisive enough in January. You know, it was obvious, you know, Josh mentions Coletta Carr there, and he has, like, that name has flown around loads. And you look at his profile and you look at his age and you look at what it would have cost, and it makes sense. Like, was it 26 million Marseille wanted somewhere in that region? Like, they've not committed themselves to 18 million on Kabak, but they will in the summer if he does okay. And look, I'm not being funny. It's an extra 8 million quid, and they could have got this guy in January if they'd have went and done it at the start of January. And if he's that heavily touted by Liverpool and their committee or whatever it is, why not do it? You know what I mean? They can be too clever for their own good at times, but having said that, the overall on them is that they've been hugely successful at it. I think what's happened in January is a black mark against them. There's no doubt about that. I don't think the Davis one is trying to be too clever. I just think it was, what are the options on the 1st of February or the 31st of January? And these are the options. And let's go down the list. And they landed on Kabak and they landed on Ben Davies. I think that's what happened.
Yeah, I think sharing some of the sentiments in the chat tonight, I think it's a massive summer for FSG and kind of like a line in the sand. I think everybody wants to see the right type of investments and for Liverpool to kind of get back to where they need to be. We need to make some proper signings, and it's going to be difficult because we need to get rid of a lot of dead wood as well. So there's going to be a lot of moving parts in what would be now traditionally a difficult market with everything that's going on, but it's going to be certainly interesting to see how it all pans out. Now, lads, it's time for the XG debate, right? And I'm gonna come to you, Christy, to start with, because as I said, yourself and Josh would be far more well-versed to answer and describe some of the stats that we're going to go through now, right? And I'm going to come to you first, Christy. So XG, mm-hmm. explanation and its uses. And the reason why I want to go into this, and just to give a bit of context, I was listening to a podcast, Peter Crouch podcast, the other day, and he said the term XG makes him feel physically sick. And they were his exact words, right? So first of all, give us a little bit of an explanation on XG, its uses, and why do you think it's created a simple stat is creating so many waves amongst fans, but then you're hearing the likes of Peter Crouch be so negative about it as well.
Mm. I'm sure no matter what way you describe it, someone else is going to tell you a better way to do it or how they use it. But for me, XG is a way of attaching a value to a goal scoring opportunity. So ultimately, it's probably been brought in by someone looking for a job and then they've tied it in and they're now making $100,000 a year out of it. But to me, XG can be, if used correctly and put in context and tied to your game model, what you're trying to do, it can help you understand where you can maximize a striker, for argument's sake, where you want to try and deliver balls, for argument's sake. But I think it can also be, it can get to the point where it can get misinterpreted. For me, XG can be useful. XG chain. XG chain to me it's very, very misleading, and it doesn't accurately describe the game. XG, on the other hand, it can be useful if used properly.
Where do you sit on this, Josh? And then I'll come to Gav, because Gav's dying to chime in there. I can see in his face.
I think on this one, without wanting to sound patronising, I don't think a lot of people know what it's supposed to do. It's just a performance indicator. That's all it is. Some people think it's supposed to predict matches. It's not. It's just a performance indicator. Some people let the result dictate whether the performance was good. Some people use possession. Some people look at the number of shots taken in a game. XG is just a bit of a deeper level for that. It's just value in shots according to the probability of the shot going in. So, say for example, Liverpool take shots in a game worth around 2.8 XG and they lose to a team that have taken shots worth 0.2 XG.
It's the definition of a smash and grab, basically.
Exactly. It kind of, yeah. I mean, it kind of offers an insight into, you know, if this match was going to be played 100 times, Liverpool probably aren't going to lose that game very often. And it's a solid means really of judging a coach, you know, the impact of a coach. Say for example, I think we're going to get to him, but Graham Potter, I mean,
Brighton.
He can't actually put the ball in the back of the net, but he can coach his team to be good at restricting the ball, to be good at restricting the opponents from taking shots. And he can be good at coaching his team to be good at generating shots. Brighton are clearly very good in both of those departments. They clearly used to have a finishing issue. So I think from an expected goals perspective, a lot of the downsides stem from people who don't really, I don't think they understand what the metric's supposed to inform, to be honest.
And I think the problem probably, Josh, and I'm calling to you, Gav, don't worry. I think the problem is that probably some people don't want to understand as well. And I think that's, you know, they're a closed book. They're not open to learning new things. You know, they just, it's like that meme of the old man screaming at the cloud. You know what I mean? It's one of those type of things. People don't want to embrace it. But Gav, talking of old men shouting at clouds, mate, that's probably me and you at this stage, is it?
Ah, yeah, the old bit anyway. I shoot at clouds on Warzone on the Xbox, and I shout at clouds in real life. How it's measured is the thing that interests me. Like, I'm going to be honest, there's a lad in our WhatsApp group that puts in the XG after every game as a complete joke, and he just puts it in and goes, unlucky to today, lads, look at our XG compared to them. He's doing it as a complete joke, because once our number is heard, the other fellas, the other teams, he's like, we should have won that, end of story. But I'm wondering how it's measured, and I presume it's measured by who has the shot. Okay, so, you know, there's more expectancy on Salah to score from 10 yards. No, it's not.
That's the biggest. That's what we're about to get to. So, and I think you knew that, which is why you
don't. No, and I'll tell you what, I thought of a scenario earlier, right? So if the ball drops to Salah in the box 10 yards out, middle of goal, it's not measured on Salah as opposed to Joe Gomez. No. It's just your players in front of the goal. Okay.
Which is why Brighton have so many issues.
Okay. The second thing is the weather brought into it? Genuinely. Well, the reason I'm asking is because if a ball is crossed into the back box on a nice day and there's no wind going around and you have a free header from 10 yards, the reaction when you miss is you should have scored that. If there's wind blowing all over the place, and this is no joke, Klopp goes on about it all the time. The wind was really bad out there. Is it measured differently because of the weather? Is it measured differently if there's a player challenging you or not challenging you, in between you and the goal and not between you and the goal? Like, for me, and I'm not, like, people are laughing at the chat, think I'm messing, I'm not. What I'm saying is there's so many things. Like put it to you this way: if Joe Gomez gets 5 headed chances in a game from 15 yards every 15 minutes in a game, right, and misses them all, and we have an expected goals of 5, that's bullshit, to be perfectly honest with you. I'm reading that at the end of the game going, you're expecting Joe Gomez, mate, to score 5 headers in that game from that position. It's not happening. Do you know what I'm saying? So, is it measured like that? Because to me, if it's not measured on the player and the situation and the context, and is someone leaning on him, is someone pushing him when he goes for the header?
Look at the smirk on both the lads' faces.
How do you get an expectancy from it? That's what I'm saying. How do you measure expectancy from that? Like, now, I'm sure you're going to educate me now, but they are the simple questions that, and not, you know, an idiot like me will ask.
No, I think it's 100%. Like, so if you put the question that I would challenge, and I challenge it all the time, and we have someone doing that type of thing. If you drop Salah in the middle of Brighton's lineup, does it change everything? Because he's technically more proficient than Welbeck or Toussaint. So does that change all of a sudden? Quite possibly. I mean, it doesn't take into effect the weather, what you had at halftime. But what my understanding is that it's generated over time, taking into consideration the type of ball that's been played. Are you finishing with your foot? Are you finishing with your head? The angles, the distances from goals, is it coming from, is it open play, is it coming from a set piece? But it's not taken into consideration there's 3 defenders between you and the goal. So basically, we'll get a shot map that shows where the higher XG has been generated by certain players, and then that's based upon, so for example, the highest XG and Josh, you might be able to go into more detail than me, but the highest XG typically created is run through the central zone onto a through ball going 1v1. That would be considered a high probability. Whereas if I'm shooting for 35 yards off the side of the, you know, 35 yards directly from goal, but at an angle, that's going to come in a lower XG. But if I'm in front of goal and Sal's in front of goal, we're still producing in the exact same position, getting the same delivery. And had the same lunch and the same cup of tea, we're producing the same XG, and he'll miss and I'll score.
But like, is
I know. Listen, it's not perfect.
I love Cogs, Ben, and Gav's head here.
Yeah, listen, and there's not many Cogs left.
But no, it's at the end of the day, like, it's to me, this is why we don't live off it, but it helps just inform the conversation.
Yeah, because it brings me back.
These days, we're all getting more screen time, which means we're also getting more blue light exposure than ever before. Too much blue light can make your eyes feel tired, dry, or blurry. It can also affect your sleep. Zenni's Blocks lenses help to protect the eyes by keeping harmful blue light out. Because they're virtually clear, add blocks to any Zenni frame for stylish, all-day protection. Get a complete pair of prescription or non-prescription blocks glasses starting at just $24. Protect your eyes now at Zenni.com.
In the context of it, you know, if Christy, if I said to you, how did you get on at the weekend, and you said, oh, hold on, I send you the XG, and you send me the XG, and I go, you won, did you? And you go, yeah, but, you know, look at the XG, and I'm going, well, you won, can you send us a video of it? But, you know, if I had the context, I'd be able to say, you'd really high XG, but three of centre halves had chances, you know, and didn't score, where two of your centre forwards had and did score. You know, I'm able to, this is what I come back to. I'm nothing against XG, you know. Well, I do. I'm to be honest, because it's not measuring stuff that I think should be measured. But if you give me the video beside it, I can look at the video and the stats and go, but lads, like, you know, it's the right back that now hasn't scored in his whole career, ends up in the middle of goal there, and that's being put in as an expected goal or rated as it, and that's where when it comes back to me, I keep going back to show me the footage. Show me the footage, and then I'll make a decision in my mind. Should he score or should he not? Now, don't get me wrong. 6 yards out, Joe Gomez or whoever it might be should score. Middle of goal, so, you know.
I think you're 100% right to do that. But I think then what someone, a statistician, would tell you is then you're just basing that upon your own subjective opinion. Like, he's a good player, he's got a good right foot, so he should score. Whereas they're basing it upon stats, objective information. So it's just a way of adding, objectifying some of the conversation and saying, hey, listen, that inside channel 6 yards from goal on the corner of the 6 yard box, statistically, that when you're one on one with a goalkeeper, statistically, that's a high goal scoring opportunity. Whereas you might look at it statistically, generally speaking, a free kick from 30 yards out, probably not scoring. But then you're saying, well, it's Trent. So then you're able to specify exactly for him. But it's certainly not perfect. But it's one of those lovely little quirks that I think there's value to it when you use it with context.
Yeah, I think context is huge.
Yeah.
Now, for the final topic, so Gav, are we good now, do you think? I feel like I know more about it now, and I feel like it could be of value, but like the lads have kind of said through smirking faces, it's...
They're only smirking because they're like, who's this idiot asking this?
I love it. Trust me.
But
you know
what's good, though? It's important to have these type of conversations, because these are the type of, you know, like Gav said there, like, you may laugh about him mentioning the weather, but if we're looking at shot quality and it's a windy day, no footballer, like, you ask any person that's played the game, I hated playing in the wind. It changes everything. It absolutely changes everything. So it's important to ask these type of questions. And, you know, I think it's good. Josh, you wanted to jump in there, mate.
Yeah, I was just going to say it. I think those questions that Gav mentioned there, I think one of the reasons maybe people don't like the metric is because people feel stupid making those points. I think those are valid points. Those are valid questions. You know,
I don't worry about Josh. I do it every night of the week. I'm stupid every night of the week. So it's water off a duck's back here.
But I think with it being something that's new, and it's something that is relatively simple while also being really complex, it can make people who have watched football all their lives, it can make them feel a bit stupid. And it's I understand. I get it. But I just think it's misused. Like, say, for example, I think a while back, I think Bayern Munich maybe beat Spurs in London, and I think they maybe won 7-2 or something like that, and the expected goals had Bayern down for about 3, maybe. I see regularly people will post those numbers before kind of criticising XG and suggesting that it's a load of nonsense. But this is where the context comes into it. If you understand the metric, if you understand what it kind of is about, rather than looking at those numbers and thinking the metric's a load of nonsense because it's clearly about 4 goals off, what that instead means would be, okay, so Bayern Munich have clearly finished their chances to a ridiculous level. And that's kind of where the context comes in. If you understand the metric inside out, you can grasp those aspects.
You're applying it to the game as opposed to trying to use it to say, well, look how wildly off that is. It's actually, well, no, credit where credit's due. They've just been on fire.
Yeah, again, looking at Brighton, if you look at Brighton's numbers this season, anyone who's interested in the numbers, anyone who focuses on data and uses data-driven decisions, basically, will look at that and think, okay, Graham Potter is not the problem because the underlying numbers are good. It's just both boxes Brighton suffer. So Brighton don't put the ball in the back of the net as often as they should, and they don't save the ball as often as they should. So say, for example, this season, if you'd put Danny Ings up front for Brighton and you'd put maybe Emi Martinez in goal, Brighton would probably be in the top 10 without changing anything else. And that's just because they've got a better goalkeeper and a more clinical striker who's likely to finish his chances at least a bang average level rather than below average level, which has been the case with Neil Maupay. But there's always context to this sort of thing. I just think it's a case of often people just feel too stupid to ask almost. I understand why. But I think we need to move past that a little bit, really.
There's a couple of, but the funny thing I will say as well, there's a couple of stat snobs and they grab it and they just run with it and they will happily just drive their agenda down your throat. So sometimes it's not even engaging those people. But like I said, and Josh said it, and like it's using it with relevance and keeping it in the context that it's meant for, as opposed to getting a little bit wild and crazy with it, you know.
Well, I'd never win an XG argument, you know, if people start throwing stats at me, because I'd literally be asking people, was it windy that day? But but like, Christy, I'll ask you as a coach, like, you know, if you're getting, you know, you showed us before the little devices you have for all your players, so you're getting all these stats and stuff fed back to a laptop or whatever it might be after every training session and stuff. But if you're looking at XG from a coach point of view, are you looking at it, say, for a striker? So if a striker has, if you have an XG during a game of 3 and you score 1, okay, are you using that as to say, you know what, that striker probably needs to work on his heading, or that striker needs to work on maybe their left foot, or one-on-one situations? Is that what you use it for?
I think that's where it's a good question. I think that's where your angle there, mate. That's, like, to me, it's just a platform to a conversation, right? Yeah. And to me, that is absolute XG stats. That's brilliant comment by Red Steve.
Yeah,
it's a great way to segue your way into a developmental conversation. Listen, you've got yourself in this position,
breaking it down a bit more. Yeah,
yeah, and that's where, like I said, you see someone tweet the XG of a game and telling you that they should have won by 4 or 5, but to me that's not enough. And that's where you have to layer it a little bit and put it all in context. And it's like a lot of stats. I mean, the one that I really genuinely hate is XG chain.
What's this? What is this?
So XG chain, I'll probably
brace yourself, Gav.
Misdescribe it, but essentially it's adding a value to every pass, to every player, based upon how an attack finishes. So if I'm a center back and I play one pass, and 5 passes later, the ball is in the back of the net, then I'll end up with a high XG chain rating because it was a very success. It was deemed a successful attack. Now, my pass might have been, I could have been Lovren knocking the ball 5 yards to Van Dijk, who knocked it 70 yards over the fullback. Mm-hmm. Salah taps it in, but yet my rating's the same as Van Dijk. So I think that part's a little bit dangerous. Same sense, I could play a ball to in the midfield, goes out the right wing goes on, beats 4 or 5 players, lays it off for someone, we're going to still carry the same XG chain rating. And that part is difficult for me. I wouldn't really want to get involved in that one.
Yeah, I'm not going to get involved either, if that's okay.
What about you, Josh? Do you want to pick that one up?
I think gladly we've moved the conversation away from that. In terms of the, you know, the data world, if you like, this kind of, I think, expected possession models is kind of the now thing. That's what Liverpool use in the recruitment department. So the way in which Liverpool do that would be, say, for example, Van Dijk makes a 5-yard vertical pass to Fabinho. Liverpool, based on everything that's happened before, based on historical data and stuff, will be able to put a value on that pass in terms of what it's added to Liverpool's likelihood of scoring, Liverpool's likelihood of putting the ball back in the back of the net. So every single action is kind of tied in with the likelihood of scoring a goal has this player's actions, has this player's pass, cross, whatever, increased our likelihood of scoring a goal? But that's kind of still in the works. That's kind of in the public space, at least. That's not really publicly available. That's kind of something that Liverpool were a little bit ahead of the curve with, hence their ability to identify the likes of Andy Robertson and maybe Naby Keita as well to an extent.
So just on
again,
that, mate,
really complicated there.
Yeah, because the one thing, because I want to get on to, and I'm glad you said Naby Keita, because I want to finish on the discussion around Jordan Henderson and Naby Keita and some of the kind of narratives that have been written around those. But I'm just trying to get my head around it, right? So the XG chain one, you know, I played a couple of seasons at right back, right? And I either clip a ball. What are you smirking at there, Chris?
Don't say a word, mate.
He never opened his mouth. I was hoping he would, but he didn't.
Don't forget, you played centre back behind me for a long time. I've got many a story there. So
just pull the strings back there, pal.
what I was going to say, Josh, is, you know, a lot of the time as a fullback, you either clip it down the line or you take an easy pass inside to a centre midfielder, right? So are we saying that we're now moving away from XG chain? Is that what you're saying? That, you know, my weighting as a fullback and I'm playing a ball simply inside to a centre midfielder who then hooks it down the line, that's now not going to be given equal weighting to somebody who maybe plays a killer pass as part of that same sequence. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think XG chain is widely that used, to be honest. I'd be surprised if it's used to a really thorough level at any kind of club because of its flaws, really. But I think, as I said, expected possession value models, they're kind of coming in, although they sound really stupidly complex, they're what's coming in the modern day, really. That's what kind of a lot of the data companies, you know, Opta, StatsBomb, that's what they're working on, really, a way of quantifying what every action on the field does to a team's likelihood of scoring.
So mine would be weighted less than the guy that's making the assist, because I think that's where I've had the problem. It's like, you know, if I'm getting credit as the guy that's played a brilliant through pass, so Philip Coutinho beat two men and slide rule pass through, and there's me, you know, a stodgy fullback who's passing it inside to a centre midfielder. And
you're 100% taking the credit, aren't you?
Oh, 100%. That's why I'm like, let me just get this right.
You're definitely showing your ma, like, your XG chain.
And you described yourself very nicely there as well.
Yeah. Do you know what it sounds like to me, though? It sounds like, you know, XG chain, like Josh says and Christy as well, it sounds a bit ridiculous. But that sounds to me more like watching for patterns. You know, don't put a rating on it. Just let's see the pattern. Like, so, like Josh says, if Van Dijk plays a vertical pass to Fabinho, who turns him and puts one over the back for Alexander Arnold, and we score and we do it two or three times, it's a pattern. It's not a value. It's something that, you know what, when we do this and we do it right, we get it. We get in on goal, we create chances. And that sounds very simplistic, you know. Yeah, Gav, do things really good and you'll get good stuff from it. But what I mean by it is, you know, we spoke, Jamie, loads about why are Liverpool constantly crossing the ball in the box? Why do you keep doing this? Whereas if you go back and you look and you say, we used to just get Trent on it and he'd play it inside the Salah who might hold off somebody and somebody running from midfield and them patterns, I don't think you need to put a value on it. That sounds more to me like, let's watch patterns and let's see which patterns work. You know, we've all seen it from Man City for years. The ball in behind fullbacks,
they
cut back
goal,
and the score.
Yeah.
That's a pattern. You know what I mean? And of course, if you apply that to an XG chain, it's going to have a higher value because it works. You know, the sort of way. So I don't know. It's one of those where I think it's an interesting thing to look at, but putting a value on it is probably, in my opinion, the wrong thing to do. Just watch it, look at it. It's going, it works for you. So that's a pattern that should be used as much as you possibly can within certain games and certain environments.
Now, lads, coming on to the last topic, right? And I'll probably save probably the most divisive one to last, which is probably not the wisest move. So I am one of the world's biggest Jordan Henderson fans. For lots of reasons, I think he's a very good footballer. First and foremost, I think his range of passing is fantastic. I think his drive, his ability to read the game. Look, I can list loads of things. But what I would say is, and I'm going to come to you on this one, Josh. There's a lot of what Jordan Henderson does that potentially doesn't sit on an Excel sheet or doesn't get captured, you know, in terms of stats. And to bring in what I would say is maybe a player slightly differently to him, which is Naby Keita, who for lots of people is a stats machine. He's an incredibly technically gifted footballer. Don't get me wrong. If we can keep him fit, he's got huge value to the team. These two players seem to be the two poster boys for stats and for those that maybe don't like stats and trying to quantify the impact of the captain, for example. I suppose the question is, it's difficult to kind of put a question on it, I suppose. How are we able to ultimately assess players when a lot of people want to just focus on stats, and when some players, i.e. the likes of a Jordan Henderson, his impact on this team can't always be measured with those stats, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I think at the bottom line really is football's played by humans. I think a lot of what Henderson does is beneficial on the human side of things, like, you know, leadership and all that sort of stuff. Obviously, you can't measure leadership. That's not something you can measure. You will not be able to find on any spreadsheet whether a player is a talker on the pitch. And anyone who's played the game, anyone who hasn't played the game, should probably know that if you've got someone on your team who is a talker, who's an organizer, it does naturally help. Having said that, like, not every single player needs to be that. Not every single a team is comprising of different individuals, isn't it? And if you've got Henderson on the field, you can then maybe play an Abby Keita who might be a little bit quieter, but from a data perspective, offers a tangible difference in terms of events, like stuff that's quantifiable. Keita ticks those boxes. Keita's effective in those areas. So, you know, I understand both sides, and I think that's kind of where the fall down is. You've usually got you're in one camp or the other, but I get both sides. Even looking back at the expected goals thing, you know, talking about whether it's windy and stuff like that, and I get that. But again, with it being a model, it's kind of just looking at football as though it was played by robots. And I think Bielsa said in the past, you know, I would win every game if my football players were robots and if every player had exactly the same ability. But obviously they don't. Football's played by humans, so different things happen. But a lot of the numbers is just kind of, they kind of remove the human side. And
look, staying healthy isn't easy. Watching your diet, hitting the gym, avoiding stress. But a good night's rest helps boost your overall health and wellness. And it couldn't be easier. The new Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed is the only bed that effortlessly adjusts in response to both of you. The result? You wake up ready for anything. Proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep. During our Memorial Day sale, save $1,000 on the new Sleep Number 360 Special Edition Smart Bed, Queen, now $1,799, only for a limited time. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
Certain players that are massive in the human side, such as Henderson, that get a little undervalued.
Gav, Josh touches on a good point there when he talks about camps. Does there need to be camps? Can Jordan Henderson not just be a really good captain and a really good footballer, and Naby Keita also be a really good footballer, but just in a different way? It just seems like, you know, the two things can't live in tandem together at the moment.
No, you have to be in a camp. It's just the way it is. That's how life is now. Comparing Jordan Henderson and Naby Keita is ridiculous. And that isn't because I'm telling you Jordan Henderson's a better player than Naby Keita. I'll put it to you this way. If Liverpool name a side tomorrow, right, with Fabinho at the base, Henderson to the right, and Thiago to the left, what are you going to say about Jordan Henderson? What you're going to say about Jordan Henderson is he presses well, he tackles well. People will tell you he doesn't track runners, but trust me, I've been at Anfield loads of times, and trust me, he tracks runners, okay? For me, one of his biggest things is his positional sense to allow Salah to cheat at football. I've said it for ages. He allows Mo Salah to cheat at football because I've literally sat 10 rows on the centre circle, 10 rows from the front, and watched Jordan Henderson, watched him with my own eyes, continuously telling Mo Salah not to track back. Continuously. He just keeps saying, I'll do that, you stay there. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to pin a fullback. And if the fullback wants to continue on, fine, we'll pin your centre half. And now you're in real trouble when we get the ball back. That's what Jordan Henderson will do. You know, he'll do all that stuff. He's a good range of passing. I agree with you, Jamie. He scores the odd goal. But if I name that team, I'm Naby Keita in it. You're not going to look for Naby Keita to go, will Naby Keita allow Trent to go? Will he allow Salah to go? Will he track runners? What you're looking for Naby Keita to go? How many men can he go past? How many killer passes can he hit? How many times can he get in the box? How many shots can he get away? How many assists can he provide? They're two different footballers. They're both midfielders, but they're two different footballers. And that's why you have a squad. Because if I go out and I name a Liverpool side and they're not doing well, you don't just bring on the same sort of fella for the same sort of fella, do you? You bring on a different type of player to try and influence the game. And that's what a squad is all about. You know, Wijnaldum, Fabinho, Thiago, Henderson, Jones, Keita, Milner. Name them all. They're all different in some way to each other because they need to be. They need to have, like Christy touched on earlier, there's certain ethics that Klopp has, like work hard, you know, press, work for each other, cover each other, all that sort of stuff. But they're all different. So at the end of the day, for me, you know, unless you're two number nines that stand in the box and look for crosses, you can compare them. What's the goals like? But the comparison for me is just, I'm sitting there going, why are we doing this? There is games, don't get me wrong, there is games where you say, we're going to be completely on top here against a really low block and Keita might be more suited to this game than Henderson. Or there might be one where it could be just, look, it's up and down the pitch, up and down the pitch. It's going to be frantic. Henderson might be better suited. That's the only sort of stuff that comes into my head. And look, people will tell you that Jordan Henderson is this, that and the other in a negative way. And you, Jamie, will tell me how he is great in other ways. That's absolutely fine. That's opinions on players and their attributes. But then to convert it into, let's compare it to Naby Keita or anybody else in that midfield, I think it's a waste of time, in my opinion. You know, and you can have all the stats you want. But when I sit and watch games of football, I'm expecting something different from Jordan Henderson to Naby Keita. So why am I sitting comparing them at the same time? And that might sound very simplistic. It may sound silly, but that's just the way I look at it. You know, they're all different. They all do different things. Some do things better than others. And I think because of the system Liverpool have and the way they play football, I think sometimes they get pigeonholed a little bit into, oh, functional, functional, functional. They don't do anything outside that. How functional can you be? Who's the best at it? And I don't think it works like that. I really don't. So on Keita, on Henderson, or any other Liverpool midfielder, I think they've great attributes and they have different ways of playing football. And that suits different scenarios week in and week out.
You've spoke to me about this, Christy, in the past, about the danger of trying to compare players that play in similar positions when they're asked to do completely different things on the football pitch. And there's the, you know, this is the challenge that I think, and the frustration I have is online, you know, you're trying to compare apples and oranges. They're completely different players who bring completely different things on a football pitch. So I don't need that, feel the need to try and do this.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you see these lads talking, so they're sitting in the changing room at Anfield and they know exactly what the instructions were and they were there for the pre-match conversation. It's, you know, it's across every team, but Henderson's job is completely different to Keita's job. So to try and compare them, it's a waste of time. And that's where some of these people do lose, in my eyes, lose a wee bit of credibility when they start using stats to just drive an agenda that they already have, whether they don't like Henderson or they love Keita, whatever it may be. For me, that is the downfall, not the downfall of stats, but that's, stats can't quantify any leadership qualities of a player. Stats can't quantify organizational skills on the field. Okay, they can't quantify the mentality of a player, and that's okay, but don't use that. Don't use certain stats as leverage in order to tell me that one player is better than the next. They're not comparable. They're expected to do different jobs on the pitch. That goes back to what we talked about at the very start. You can drive whatever story you want. Like, you can always get a stat that backs up what you're looking for. Like, and you can drive that story. It's not a problem. But just comparing two players again, I mean, that's just, you're wasting oxygen. If you want Naby Keita to go do the exact job that Henderson is meant to do, I'd imagine he'd be a lesser version of him when it comes to it on the pitch. And maybe Henderson may not do the exact role that Keita's meant to do if he was asked to do that. But that's why you have balance and depth in your squad, so you can approach games in different ways and provide different roles and responsibilities. Can't have a team of clones. It'd be very boring.
Absolutely. Now, Absolutely. Now, a couple of things to mention before we wrap up. So in terms of subscribers, so you would have heard us mention on a lot of shows, we're going to be doing a giveaway. We're going to be doing a giveaway when we get to 10K subscribers, which we're close to getting. Gav is being very tight-lipped as to what this giveaway will be. So keep your eyes peeled, keep your ears peeled.
Big T-shirt with XG written on it.
Yeah, exactly. It's the wind. But from our side, just a quick note to all our subscribers, please do tell your friends about what we're trying to do. As always, we love the comments that come through, not only during the shows but also after. So if you are enjoying the content that we're putting out and you have some friends that you think will enjoy it too, please do send them a link and help them get involved and help us grow the shows, because Gav won't say it, but he works incredibly hard, as do a lot of the lads behind the scenes, in putting out a lot of varied content. You only have to look at last night, for example. We had a question of sport quiz, and then tonight we're talking about XG. So yeah, from our side, yeah, keep the support coming, and just let your mates know if you think they'll like it too. Gav, on that note, what shows do we have coming for the rest of the week?
What day is today? Wednesday. Tomorrow. We're having a day off tomorrow. Friday, you have the Friday forecast with Chris. That's a draft. If anyone has ever watched our drafts, it's not like lads pick your best 11 and we'll all go sail off into the night. It's not like that. There's always evil rules. There's always stealing players from each other and stuff like that. It's insane. So that's on Friday night. Sunday is the Fatback 4, and that's going to be different. Because there's no games on, we're going to vary up with all sorts of madness. This is where we let our hair down while there's no Liverpool games on. So the Fatback 4 will be on Sunday night, but it's going to be different and you're going to enjoy it. And then into next week, I honestly don't know, Jamie, because I genuinely don't even know when the internationals start. I don't know who's playing against each other. And all I know is that Liverpool don't play till the first weekend in April or something like that. So come Sunday, I'll sit down and we'll have a look at it and we'll plan it out. But don't worry, we'll bring out as much content as we possibly can. It will be mad and it will be crazy. And that might be a bit of really good, serious stuff like this. But most of the time it'd be lads drinking cans and shouting at each other. And, you know, that'll get you through an international break, no problem.
Absolutely. Now, with that, before we wrap up, a quick shout out to footballprizes.co.uk. Go to the website, check out the prizes, and maybe win yourself some money too. That's enough from us. Big thanks to Gav, Christy, and Josh for joining us. I hope you've all enjoyed the show and learned a little bit more about stats. I know myself and Gav, we definitely have. So with that, look after yourselves, stay safe, and we will be back with you next week on the Midweek Fix. All the best.
At Capella University, you're in control of your education. With the game-changing FlexPath format, you can set your own deadlines and move at your own pace. The faster you move, the more you save. Visit capella.edu to learn more.
Are you still mixing station gas and oil for your string trimmer, leaf blower, or chainsaw? Eliminate the mess and the guesswork with TruFuel, the original pre-mixed two-cycle fuel. TruFuel is ethanol-free and precision-engineered for small engines, improving performance and extending the life of your outdoor power equipment. And TruFuel is available for both two- and four-cycle engines. Empower your equipment with TruFuel. Available at your local home and garden center today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.